Rugby League European Federation podcast. And this week, continuing like we have with founding figures, we've certainly got one of them from Italy, Tiziano Franchini. Hello, Tiziano. How are you?
Hello, Graham. And I say hello to everybody who's listening.
Good. Where did you join us from, Tiziano?
I'm from Italy.
Whereabouts are you based and speaking to us from?
From my home. I'm on holiday. I'm very happy now. I have 2 weeks holiday, so I can relax and can restart in September in a very good way. In every single thing I do. So I need time to relax and to enjoy and to recharge and be refreshed for the September, the next year.
Okay, that's great to hear that you're getting some time to do that, Tiziano. Tiziano, of all the people I've interviewed so far, my opening question has always been the same. What is your first memory of rugby league?
I have different memories. I have memories when I was playing. I have memories when I started doing the administrator with the Italian Rugby League Federation. I have memory about coaching. I have memory about delivering rugby league all around Europe. I have big memories. It's not just one memory that I have in my head in the last 25 years I've been involved in the rugby league, so plenty of good memories of about my involvement into the rugby league world.
Indeed, yeah, there will be, and we'll come across many of them. So what is the first time you remember being aware of rugby league and learning about it as a sport?
But the biggest one, maybe the biggest one like a player is what it was playing the Coca-Cola World 7 in 1995, where I was 17, and the first time I went to play the Sydney Football Stadium with 30,000 people looking at Italy restarting rugby league.
What a fantastic first occasion there. So tell us a bit more about how that opportunity came along, Tiziano, and how did it feel?
That was the restart of the rugby league in Italy after so long, because after the World War, there was a rugby league started in Italy in the 50s, and they started from one team, and then they reached in 10 years' time with a big help from RFL. Compared to looking at the paper that I found during the years, RFL had an investment in Italy, like talking about euro, like 200,000, 250,000 euro a year. So they developed very, very well. And there was a two division in Italy, first division, second division. And there was a time to get recognized by the Olympic Committee, but then politics and rugby union got involved and rugby league died. So after it died in 1963. So after 32 years, we started with Mick Pezzano and John Benigni, which selected a few players from Italy, including myself and my brother, and Orazio Daron. And we went there to play that tournament, that international tournament. So aside the fact that it was a big event, there was some restart of the Italian rugby league in the rugby league world. So it was very, very, very good emotion. I was very young, first time so far from home. And the emotion was incredible, representing Italy in a tournament like that, with a new sport and with everything that was behind, it was an amazing feeling.
it must have been amazing to walk out. It was at the Sydney Football Stadium, and what type of players did you play against? You know, who was types of level of players, names that you played against that day?
I have to check the journalist. There was a NRL teams. There was Fiji, Samoa, England, Papua New Guinea, Morocco, Fiji, Tonga. If I'm not repeating myself, Japan. So it was a top class tournament.
Well, that's an amazing start, and we share that because in the same year I made my debut for Scotland in a game in Dublin against Ireland, but not of the same stature of that, as you say, playing at the Sydney Football Stadium. So you've got that kind of experience already. So what was, certainly that young age as well, what was your next major playing experience in rugby league?
When about administration is taking back the game to Italy, because at that time, Mick Pezzano and John Benigni were in Sydney, and there was a lot of connection with Australia. Then Italy played the Mediterranean Cup in 1999. They played the Emerging Nation World Cup in 2000 in England, but nothing was connected to the Italian soil. Okay. And the Italian territory. So in 2002, we started to think to get an association registered in Italy and play two games. We played Republic of Kazan, Tatarstan in Russia, and Scotland student in Padova in 2002. That was another very good good event that I remember very well, bringing 22 Italian players and playing rugby league, and restart again with the rugby league, but in the Italian territory. That was basically the start for to have organization on the Italian territory to start developing rugby league.
Okay.
So that's another date to sign.
Yes.
July 2002.
Okay. Just before that, when we get into that, because that'll be the crux of what you achieved in Italy. You played some time in France as well in the late 90s. You played some rugby league there as well as a player.
After that tournament in Italy, I've been contacted by Tess by Thierry, because I got graduated in law in July 2002. Then I went to have my holiday. Then all of a sudden, Tess by Thierry called me and said me, "Do you want to go to play in France?" Yes, why not? I'm free. I have to start to work. I have to many aspiration for work and stuff. But then they told me, "Do you want to go?" Yes, I can go. I'm very happy. When I leave, they want you in France in 2 weeks' time. Okay, fine. So I got in contact with the team at the time. Châtillon, the Châtillon Rugby League Club is based close to Paris. And I went there with 1 month trial. I stayed in France for 3 seasons.
Ah, fantastic. It just sounds like at that age, you just wanted to have an adventure, you know, and if somebody said there's a rugby league game, then off you went, and you got a month's trial and you stayed.
You must get opportunities. It's what I tell to everybody in Italy, especially to young players. As a Italian federation, we have many connections in Australia, in France, in England. And I told, especially for the young guys, we can provide you some opportunities, some life opportunities, and sport opportunities. I'm saying, get them, take them. It's not losing 1 year, it's doing something for your life. doing something you like. So we encourage people to get some experience. I did that, and I was very, very happy. It changed me for a lot of reasons, not just with the sport, but I went there knowing and I had the chance to know better French culture. Then I was involved, I was living with New Zealand players and coaches. And at that time, when I arrived in Paris, there was a Quentin Ponga, if I don't playing over there. Yeah. And I can tell you, first, I have a very good memory of him. And then when he passed away, I felt very, very bad.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was a sad story indeed. So, but the great thing is, when you say to the young people now in Italian Rugby League, go on and make the most of it, have an adventure, you're speaking from someone who's done that and gone and off to France. It's a great motivation for the young people.
Yeah, but time changed. They want to have this. They're not very used to get adventures with the right attitude. We had a couple of cases that somebody went in England and then they came back home after 2 months. So you have to be ready, not just from a point of view of the sport, but being ready with a positive mindset to get this experience.
Yeah, understandable. And just before we move on into Italy Rugby League more, just describe what type of player were you? What position did you play and how would you describe your playing style?
Big defender. And I was playing a hooker or second row or lock. It depends when... when I went to play in France, my knowledge of rugby league had a very good improvement.
Yeah.
Especially working with people like with the Australians and with Quentin.
Yeah. No, I understand that, Tiziano. I off the back of 1995, I had a couple of trials in Workington and Carlisle. It didn't get to the same level as yourself. But when I moved to London Broncos and then you became in a rugby league environment, you know, and I was in the administration there, you began to learn so much more. So I can understand those 3 years in France were very rich for your development as a rugby league person, but also as a person overall. So you take these great experiences, as you say, back to Italy, and things are beginning to happen in Italy because you're wanting to connect up, you know, what the national team did in the Coca-Cola Sevens, but wanting to create it in Italy. So tell us the things that you started doing and the colleagues you work with in Italy from 2000 onwards.
No, can you repeat? Sorry.
Sorry. So if we take you back to Italy and you're beginning to develop the game in Italy, tell us some of the first things you achieved to get the game being played in Italy.
Look, funny things, then Ray Answorth came to Italy to deliver a coach education in 2007, I think. We were so desperate to have a field and some room to have this coach education to start with rugby league, that we end up in Fabio Di Pietro's house, not very big, with Ray, that he delivered the coach. Then Ray and Fabio's parents started to talk half in English, half in Italian, and they started to understand each other with some grappa wine, and we had a very good atmosphere. So it was not just having some coaching education, getting in touch with rugby league mentality, but we connected our Italian hospitality, and we ended up talking about rugby league, even if we didn't have any knowledge, but we spent like 2 days in a very positive way, and we enjoyed combining rugby league, Italian hospitality, the Italian mentality styles with some English legend that was there to help us to develop. That was a very good start for the Italian Rugby League Federation. Then it started to get a little bit more organized. In 2008-2009, we participated to the European Shield. It was called like that at the time. We won those two editions, and we have been invited to, because of the withdrawal of Russia in 2009, we have been invited to the European Cup. Good experience, but it showed us that the level of the professional rugby league is totally, totally different from the amateur one that we were used to it. We got burnt, we got the biggest loss on our history against Scotland. And from starting, but even if we lost so much, we started learning how to manage this big gap between the professional and amateur level. And then we started realizing about being more prepared, not just on the field, but even off the field, that nothing everything has to be managed in a proper, in a professional way, even if you don't get money about it, but it has to be for professional. That's the biggest things that we learned from 2009 European Cup, and that's it. That was the beginning. Then with this in mind, we started to have some satisfaction. We won Italy. We won Wales. We won England. We won England in an upset game in a World Cup in 2013 World Cup pre-war match, and so we had a lot of good memories.
Good, and I have to say, you mentioned Ray Unsworth there. Knowing Ray, I think he would have enjoyed the Italian hospitality, without a doubt. So I can imagine it was two very good days. What was happening on
one second about Ray. Yeah. The only thing that we found out who was like 4 or 5 years later, because it was so simple and he was talking in a very simple way to make us understand the game. That was amazing. Then we found out he won Super Leagues many times and he was one of the best coach in England. So it was unbelievable that he introduced himself in a very calm and a very simple way.
Yeah. And of course, one of the other things, Tiziano, you were there at the origins of the Rugby League European Federation, weren't you? Were you in 2003 in Paris? What do you remember about that?
I remember the concept that they raised up, because it was on the air to have a European Federation to help developing countries to one, and it was a good atmosphere and the good concept to have this organization that at that time it was like an association of federation and with a goal to develop rugby league all around Europe with the same system. And that was the feeling I had. It was a very good impression, especially for the future, involving developing and going on with some guidelines. But knowing that there was so many different level of rugby league all around Europe.
Yeah.
I can tell we were not very big numbers, because I remember there was Morocco, Serbia, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, of course England and France, Italy. I don't remember if there was Germany as well, but I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. No, I think you've covered most of the people. Tell me, Tiziano, you obviously, you know, in Italy, like a lot of countries, you knew about rugby league. You'd played at a really good standard, and you were obviously trying to convince more and more people in Italy to play the game. How did you find that people received rugby league? Because in my experience, people who try it love it. But was it easy to sell to people, or did you still have some hurdles from rugby union?
Italian rugby union is very strong. Is trying every year to stop us, to make us die, like they did already in the past. They had a very good record to stop rugby league, because they used all their power in the 60s to make rugby league die, and especially without having the sport recognized by Italian Olympic committees. Then there was some political issues, and then they stopped. They made the rugby league die in 1963. We have almost the same problem, because the rules about getting recognized by the Italian Olympic Committee, the way is very complicated and it's very long. But then we had the rebel issue, and we are still running with them a challenge from 2010. So it's already 10 years we have to fight with rebels in Italy, which are connected with rugby union. The only thing they could have done, it was join rugby union, because they were not recognized by international federation, and so they started to have, they want to have a recognition, and they went to develop rugby league under rugby union umbrella. That's unbelievable for the people that knows what rugby league is and where rugby league is from. Because if we are going to go back into the history, rugby league and rugby union were together. Then there was the big split, and they started hating each other. So I don't know why some people that claims to develop rugby league has to go under a rugby union umbrella after 125 years.
And it's
unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to your question, it's very hard to involve people, especially because due to the fact rugby league is not, as you know, how many times RLEF or RLIF changed the plane for the international fixtures and all these kind of things. You know, how many times you introduced a new plan in 10 years? I remember you at least introduced four different developing plans. Yep. So without having a stable plan, I hope in the future we can have a better planification. It's very hard to attract people without giving them the opportunity and the aspiration to fight for something. Especially because we are not so many to play rugby league in Italy, but we want to have selection, and we want to operate in their mindset as well, to push them to work and to follow us to get some satisfaction, some opportunities. Wearing an Azzurri jerseys is the biggest things they want to do. but without no having a planification, because every time we play, it's a lot of money we spend. Because it's not going to, because we want to play in a very good field with a good standard, and so if we want to play with a certain standard, we have to pay. That's the biggest things.
Okay, so just going back to those early days when you've got momentum building in Italy and. What sort of, have you got some insight, where's the base of Italy Rugby League in terms of where the main playing clubs or whatever? Just give people a bit of understanding of the geographics of Italian Rugby League.
Okay, now we are in a situation where we are revitalizing the domestic competition. And we have always the two zone, the three zones that we are in, so it's going to be north, east, northwest, and south, especially Sicily. These are three areas that are very far from each other, especially because of the northwest is based in Milan, Piacenza, Torino. And from the other side is Venezia, Udine, so it's very far away. So we have to combine and split in two groups as we are doing this year. Hopefully COVID can allow us to start a domestic championship. But at this stage, no news from Olympic committees for official competition restart. And then we had this year a guy from Rome that is interested to help us developing, and in September I have to go to Rome to talk with him and a few other clubs that wants to join our competition. So we just need to have this green light from this pandemic situation, and then we have start, because we don't know, every area now has different rules to approach the sport contact.
Sure. Okay. So if I take you back now to the first World Cup, first full World Cup Italy was in was 2013. What did that mean for Italy to make the World Cup? And as you say, you had that wonderful win against England in a warm-up match. What was the impact of Italy winning the World Cup?
The impact was amazing, especially in Italy, because we have a sport newspaper. It's called the Gazzetta dello Sport. It's a pink newspaper which talks... All the time about soccer football. So in a 40-page newspaper, you have 37 pages of football and 3 pages for the rest of the sport. Yes. During World Cup, the 2013 World Cup, we went straight away in that journal. Italy beat England. Italy beat Wales. We had a very big. Media return with the 2013 World Cup, so very happy. And then the point was that being into a high level, the biggest rugby league competition in the world, the World Cup, was everything was new, everything was great, and. And we had very good memories. Unfortunately, if we beaten Scotland, it was very 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 good. I think we ended up into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, yeah. But, there was a great match at Workington. I think there was a draw.
Draw 30-30 each.
Yeah, yeah. And Tiziano, for many countries, because you talked about in 2009, I think it was, when the heavy defeat from Scotland and realizing there was a gap between professional and amateur. So how did you begin to close that gap and obviously beginning to attract some from Italian players from Super League, but more from NRL? And how did that relationship manage? Because it's quite difficult at times, isn't it, to manage the relationship between those in Italy and those in other parts of the world. And there's a balance to be found. How did you and your colleagues approach that?
The point is, you cannot compare a player that is that started to play rugby league when he was 3 or 4 years old, when people started to play when he was 20, 22 or 23, just because they had different background. So 20 years of experience, and especially in Australian England, they had opportunities with the academies, with like under 16 academies, under 18 academies, and then got into the professional system. That's something that developing nation needs to have to reduce the gap between between pro player and amateur player. It's just about the preparation for a top level of rugby league.
Yeah, and how did you balance? There is that absolutely that difference. So when it came to the World Cup in 2013 and 17, how did you balance opportunities for domestic Italian players who didn't have that same experience, but wanted them to come in along with professional players? Because there's a balance to be struck, I think.
Okay, I can tell you. In 2010, we had two domestic players in the team. Yep. In the team. In 2017, we had four players.
Yeah.
Next year, 2021, we will have eight players from a domestic competition, from Italian domestic players.
Yeah.
So increasing that number, it will show the people that when they are going back to Italy, they start spreading the word around what is the top rugby league. It's different from what we play domestically. So teaching them and helping them to develop and reduce that gap between pro players and domestic players.
Yeah, and it's just it seems to me it's so, like you say, it's so important to allow those players from domestic to play and then take back that knowledge and that motivation, because that's what you did in 1995. You were given a great opportunity and then you've taken it back into Italy and given so much back. So
yeah, but
it's important to have those players, isn't it?
It's kind of different when you receive. Now we are in a situation when these players can receive an opportunity like that. They must be the ambassador of the Italian Rugby League Federation, going back, involve people and telling that if you want to reach that level and if you want to play in the World Cup, you have a lot of sacrifices to do and you have to get the opportunity to raise up your profile. Yeah. Playing, getting experience, getting ready physically, mentally, and technically is what we are. It's our mission to create this domestic player ready for the World Cup. Our mission is making the level of Italian rugby league higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
That's why we need opportunities to play and to not be stuck with no fixtures.
Yeah. Okay. And of course you've made a lot of friendships in rugby league, particularly across in Europe, because you've got a long history. So What are some of the trips you've enjoyed, you know, in Europe, and friendships you've made in your time with colleagues from other countries?
I can pick two games that and both against Lebanon in 2017, where we went there with a full domestic side of women, we won.
Yep.
And we went there for with a full domestic side of men, playing the Mediterranean Cup. We had a very good revenue because we start the day. Everybody was happy about the organization, the structure. Unfortunately, the men lost 4-6 with a bad call from the referee at the last minutes of the game, not giving a try. That was try. But at the end of the day, that was the best level of domestic rugby league we have seen. But because we prepared in a very good way, knowing we got organized with the Lebanese Federation, we had good preparation and had a very good revenue for everything that was involved in a sport way, on and off the field.
Yeah. Good. And also you're a coach educator as well, so you've obviously gone and helped other countries as well. Give everybody an idea of some of the other countries you've helped through passing on your coaching knowledge.
Sorry. The point is, RLEF created this staff to help developing countries to raise up their knowledge of rugby league. And I've been lucky to work with Martin Creek and going around Europe to deliver coach education. I went in different countries with him, and it was always the same situation. People are starving of getting more knowledge of rugby league. They want to be involved. They want to raise up their profile. There is just so much passion on the grassroots of rugby league that you cannot figure out when until the moment you are going to meet the people or the players that are going to attend these meetings, these coaching education. Everybody wants to have the best. Everybody wants to develop in a proper way. And everybody wants to raise up their profile in the rugby league, but to have that is a long journey, because it's not just about getting knowledge of about coaching or about refereeing. You need people to play rugby league. We need to go. I said we because I feel part of rugby league European Federation. We must start working with kids, school, having some direction and providing opportunities and provide opportunities not just for coaches but for players, for everybody that is being involved there. And another thing that that is very good problems about rugby league in Europe is that, I think England and France, we don't watch rugby league on TV.
Right.
So it's going to be it's something that it has to be managed there properly, because most of the time I can tell you my experience with my son. World Cup, football World Cup. He never cared about football. Football World Cup every day every day football on TV, and then he asked me, "Dad, I want to go play football." First, I got ashamed because I choose football. Then I said, "Okay, I take you to football because I want the best for my son." But now, unfortunately, he stopped playing football.
And when you look back, Tiziano, at the 25 years so far that you've been involved, what's your proudest moment or proudest thing you feel that's been achieved?
I think the proudest moment I'm talking about, because I'm not looking at the past. I want always to look at the future, at the present and the future. I think the best moment that I'll be very proud about all my work during this 25 year, it will be when we will have in Italy a very stable competition and get recognized by the Italian Olympic committees. Yeah. That will be the proudest moment I will ever have in rugby league, because yeah, that means I achieved the goal I wanted to achieve in all my rugby league life.
I think that's very understandable, Tiziano, and it's typical of you to be looking forward.
But I put in so much effort to reach that, so I will get it. Something that rugby league taught me, never give up, so I keep going.
Yeah, well, I think if you've played in the forwards, or any position in rugby league, that's what the game teaches you. You have to keep going. You can't stop. You can't pause for a moment. Otherwise, the opposition will score a try, and that's certainly the passion and the belief that you've brought.
That's why with all the problems we had in Italy, Ribas not being recognized, always problems with founding and all these kind of things. But I have a strong attitude to reach this goal.
And can I ask you, Tiziano, one last question? You talked about that obviously there was a lot of playing in the early 1960s, and I think Australia toured to Italy. Have you met some of the players from that time? Do you, you know, and talked about what happened then?
I had it's very hard to reach these people. I didn't have the chance. I was playing in rugby union, of course, with the son of Tony Rossi, the one who played in England.
Right. Okay.
And I didn't know that at that time, because it was before 2020. It was a 2000, yes. Season 2000-2001. Yeah. And I didn't know that there, but. In 2013, we went to Turin because we have been contacted by a son of one of the first captain of Italy team, the rugby league Italy team. Right. And we went there because he wanted to introduce us the last one who played that game.
Wow.
We had some pictures. He showed us with a lot of pride the first Italy jersey. He had already the ball, the presentation program, some pictures and stuff. So it was very good to see these guys that he had some throat problems. He was talking with the microphone, but he was so proud about seeing that. We are still developing rugby league.
Yeah,
that's a very good emotion. One of the biggest emotion in rugby league I have. Knowing the past.
Yeah, I can imagine that, Tiziano, where that must have been a proud moment for everybody, because those who played in the 1960s would have had to overcome challenges. And you and your colleagues from 1995 have picked up the ball, literally, and taken on those same challenges. So listen, Tiziano, it's been absolutely fascinating to hear your story. And long may it continue, and on behalf of all those in Italy and in Europe who've benefited from your commitment, thank you. And thank you for taking the time to speak to us
no
today.
No problem. Thank you, Graham.
Okay, folks, that finalizes today's podcast. Again, we're seeing more and more rugby league being played. But again, I hope you're out there and you and your families and your rugby league communities are staying fit and healthy as much as possible.